Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
So here's what they're saying about that speech in Russia. Vladimir Putin was speaking to, I don't know what the capacity, I know the capacity of the stadium he was in was 80,000 people. And you see thousands of people there in a sort of pro-Russia rally celebrating the anniversary of the invasion of Crimea. And who doesn't want to celebrate that? So the place is packed with people. Putin is up on the stage. And then suddenly while he's saying pro-Russian remarks, the video screen cuts away, the transmission cuts away, and you see patriotic music being played. For those of us who've wondered about the mental or physical stability of Vladimir Putin since he's doing such crazy things, you thought, ooh, maybe something is going on here. But they now say that it was a technical glitch, and it appears as though that may be the case, since they then did broadcast the speech in its entirety. He was near the end of his speech. They played the patriotic music, it sounds like, too soon. I was kind of, well, I don't know what I was rooting for there, but if the people saw you're chuckling now, Joel, I'll finish this thought. Joel Ostro's on a phone line from Benedictine University. He is the comparative and international politics professor who helps us understand things Russia sometimes. And I was thinking, well, maybe the people in Russia will see how unstable this guy is, and maybe there will be some pushback from the ground up. Hi, Joel. How are you?
Good morning. Doing all right. Thanks, Jim.
Probably don't wish for that, though. I mean, boy, that's a long way from where we are today. If the people in Russia ever say, wait a minute, we shouldn't be invading these countries, we shouldn't be killing these people, our soldiers are getting killed, and there's only one person in the country that thinks it's a good idea, and he's a madman. I want them to get that message, Joel.
Yeah, well, we'd like them to get that message, but you know, I'm not sure that madman is the accurate description. We've talked about that before. And certainly not the case that he's the only one who thinks it's a good idea. But the bigger problem is, you know, it's going to be, like you said, a long time. It's hard to fathom a bottom up movement in Russia against Putin, because the length of time of censorship propaganda, you know, results in a kind of brainwashing, or my co-author prefers to call it, essentially a brainwashing. Of a population that doesn't have access to alternate information. You know, there is a segment of the population that can get on VPNs and get information, but these are people that have access to pretty high-tech computers and have the knowledge of how to do it, have the high-speed access to make that doable. You know, your average Russian around the country, you know, that's harder for most people as it would be here. So the degree of information, information about what's actually happening on the ground is limited to a pretty narrow segment of the population. So I don't think that's something we can really hope for. But as Russian failure continues and their progress is slowed and the problems become more compounded on the ground, you know, mid-level and higher-level opposition from people who actually do know what the problems are and might start to oppose continued killing of Ukrainians, you know, that might be a different matter altogether.
Yeah. Well, maybe we shouldn't dwell on that point then, since that seems far-fetched. But really, I've also wondered if, though, while the state media does seem to the state controls the media, and the state media is calling it a special operation, right? Yeah. Yeah. As though they're doing Ukraine a favor. I don't know what that is supposed to mean to people. It sounds so suspicious to my Western ears. But I wonder if yet the word is trickling through. People in Russia do know what's going on. And I don't know if this even matters, Joel, but in their hearts they don't approve of it. They know this is wrong. I want to believe that, you know, witness the woman who stood up on Channel 1 in Russia and the most watched evening newscast, the one Putin watches, with a sign saying, stop the war, you're being lied to.
But she knew they were being lied to. She's a news editor. She has access to, you know, information that's not allowed to be broadcast, right? That's the difference. But the vast majority of the population, they think that Russia is fighting against Nazis and that the West is
Do you think they really think that? I know that's what he's pushing, but do you think they I'm not challenging you. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm challenging you. Do you think that that's really what the people of Russia think?
You know, I'm going to quote Georgi Sitarov, my co-author, again, who said this back in 2005, before most people were referring to Putin as a dictator or Russia as a dictatorship. Be careful interpreting the results of opinion polls taken of a population that's been hypnotized. So 100%, John, if the Russian people, you know, in the main had access to truthful information rather than disinformation, they would almost universally oppose this action because they're Russians and Ukrainians. It's like Illinoisans and Wisconsinites. You know, we've got our differences, but we don't want to go and slaughter them, right? So if they had access to actual information, of course, but the problem is that, you know, you've got 20 years plus of this kind of drumbeat from the dictator and crippling censorship. And the propaganda has been intense and, you know, people are susceptible to that. When they don't have other messages, they get the messages and they tend to trust them. So,
all right, stay right there, Joel. Let's continue this conversation in a minute. I'll put you on hold, and maybe you've got a question for Joel Ostro, too, from Benedictine University. 312-981-7200 is the telephone number, particularly in light of some of the things he has said lately, some of the things he has said, and I don't mean at that rally, but in that televised speech that he gave the other day. Those, again, seem just absolutely crazy to me. Joel Ostro is a professor of international politics and comparative politics at Benedictine University. Joel, what did you make of those comments that Vladimir Putin made earlier this week?
Yeah, so they were chilling. So there's a Russian 24-hour news channel called Russia 24, and he gave a blistering speech targeted, obviously, to a domestic audience. And the notable part of it was when he called on, and people might have heard reporting on this, called on people to hunt down traitors, dissenters, traitors to Russia, to hunt them down and eliminate them. Now, it was broadcast. He spoke in a Russian idiom. It would be like if I were telling a story in English about someone who, you know, revealed some private information of mine, and I said, well, now the cat's out of the bag. And then I were telling that story to someone in Russian, I wouldn't translate the cat's out of the bag into Russian. I would say, and now everybody knows. So he spoke in an idiom about spitting out a fly that had flown into your mouth. That means eliminate them, right? Spit them out and stomp
them. Oh, okay. So yeah, I'd heard that, and I thought
if you see somebody, it's licensed to shoot to kill protesters and demonstrators in the first instance, but it's chilling because it has that Stalinist sort of great terror kind of implication, knock on doors and get them out and take care of the problem. It is a call to violence.
Yeah.
Direct call to violence.
And he's talking about Russian citizens in Russia in that,
in
correct?
Russia. Yes, yes.
Okay, well, here again, but we've been talking about how much information the Russian people have. They're aware of that. That was for domestic consumption, right?
Yes.
Yes. Did he call them Nazis, or was it just this sort of Hitlerist Nazi kind of language that he was using?
Mostly, traitors to Mother Russia.
Yeah.
And supporters of fascists and Nazis, for sure. Yeah.
So that's put that in some context for us. That kind of language.
Foreign agents. He used language about them being foreign agents, agents of the West. Right.
Yeah. But I mean, Joel, if I may, that just to me speaks to his desperation, right? Which does not mean that he's going to moderate the activities in Ukraine, but I guess it shows how maybe frustrated or angry or desperate he is to be successful there.
Oh, there's no doubt that he's angry that, his expectations, as deluded as they were, have not been realized. So there's definitely frustration in terms of you know, what's transpiring and what has transpired as a result of his incursions and the myriad ways in which, for whatever reasons, he's miscalculated, you know, grotesquely miscalculated, everything from the success of the invasion to the response of the United States and the West and the rest of the world and the effects on the Russian economy. Like every pick a way in which this venture has resulted in a negative consequence, and you know, it's everything. There hasn't been a positive for him yet. So yeah, he's angry, and it's a lashing out, but it's also a kind of maybe trying to rally the troops, as it were, as well. But it's very unpredictable. We're in uncharted territory right now. It's dangerous. Yeah.
Maybe this is my hope rather than a well-founded belief, but even though there is fighting now increasingly close to the border with Poland, I don't think he wants to invade Poland. I don't think he's going to invade Poland. I hope that if a missile crosses the line, we all don't treat that as an attack on Poland and now everybody's involved.
100%. He can't attack Poland. He can't even attack Moldova or Georgia now. You know, the Russian military is bogged down in Ukraine, massive numbers. And when, you know, there's already, you know, from the beginning, logistical problems, supply line shortages and inefficiencies, weapons failures, troops dissenting and failure to progress. And he's doubling down in Ukraine. There's no capacity to expand this fight, you know, other than inside of Ukraine. So either it's pull out of Ukraine and they're not going anywhere else because they've just had their butts kicked, or they double down in Ukraine and still get their butts kicked in Ukraine. There's no capacity to expand this elsewhere. I think that's the least of our concerns, other than what you described, the accidental, which, you know, if they're firing that close to Lviv and to the border at weapons depots and stuff, that potential for accident, of course, is very high.
One last thing for you, Joel. Some of the hawks in Congress, and I don't mean that derisively at all, are suggesting that we even up the ammunitions that we are giving them. We do everything we can to arm them. And some are saying that some are entertaining the idea of a no-fly zone over the Ukraine airspace. What's your reaction to all of that?
You know, there is much deserved praise on many levels in many respects for Adam Kinzinger, but he's been one of the loudest callers for enforcing a no-fly zone in Ukraine. You know, if you want World War III, go for it. Personally, I don't want that. because the only way to do that is to shoot down Russian planes, attack Russian anti-aircraft battalions. You know, it'd be NATO and U.S. soldiers killing Russians. In Ukraine. That's not.
I'm not asking you as a military expert here, and yep. Lord knows I'm not. But it would just seem to me like if the Russian forces are that relatively incapacitated or preoccupied or inefficient, the rest of the world could handle them in this situation. If we did fight back, everybody is standing down watching Ukraine burn. If we did fight back, we could win. And people say
no,
that's
there is no win. There is no win. It's preposterous. First of all, Russia does control the skies. And, you know, if that kind of a defeat, the risk is extremely high. It's beyond risk. It would be reckless gamble because the prospects for the most horrific response from Russia go up. And you're talking, you know, nuclear weapons launched at London, Paris, or Washington. Do you really want that? Now, in terms of increasing weapon supplies and ammunition supplies, that's probably explains why the attacks now are moving westward to try and close off those supply routes from NATO into Ukraine. I have less of a problem with that, but I've got a problem with our soldiers entering that space and actively fighting against Russians. That's not a recipe for a good outcome. It just is not.
Okay, Dr. Joel Ostro is a professor of comparative and international politics at Benedictine University. I don't have time to play it, but my friend Eric Zorn sent me some video of your son playing the fiddle when he was 15 years old at a show, and he said your kid is one of the best fiddle players around. So,
well, thanks, Eric. Yeah, he did a WGN New Year's show when he was in high school with his high school band. Connor Murray, artist page on Facebook. Check him out.
All right. Nice to hear you, Joel. Stay in touch.
Take care.